Good afternoon, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week, we have a different scenario, it seems, because we're at Fleet Mobility Live, everybody. Yes, this is a different sense, John. It's quite cool, isn't it?
Oh, love it. There's a live audience. Let's hear it from the audience. Yeah, that's fabulous. Yeah, loving being here. Where it's all happening.
Absolutely. It sounded like a little herd of sheep. But we are joined every week by wonderful innovators, pioneers and collaborators. And this week is no exception. We have got Dale Einan. Have I pronounced that correctly?
You have got it correct. Well done.
Yes. Wow. I had lessons earlier. Dale, you have had a big career. And that career is taking a little turn at the moment. But just let's reflect back on your previous role and what your role now is. And then we can dive into it.
Okay, so welcome everyone. There is still free cake down here. Not bribing people to come along to listen to me, but there is free cake. I started in Fleet just over 20 years ago. When at the time I was the head of a fleet that was quite small. And then over the years, it got bigger and bigger. And when I left, at its peak, it was probably about 10,000 assets, which was a mixture of cars, vans, HGVs, boats of all shapes and sizes, including marine-coded vessels and ships that can stay out at sea overnight, through to plant of all sorts of shapes and sizes, tractors, excavators, bulldozers, you name it, they had it. So every day was different.
Absolutely. So, and this, for those of you that don't know out there, it was the Environment Agency as was, and then it became DEFRA.
It's still the Environment Agency, just it now provides a service across the whole of the DEFRA network. So all the people who work there, all the fine staff, are still Environment Agency employees,
right.
But they just provide a service to the corporate DEFRA body. So they service about 12 organisations, but EA is the biggest one of them all.
And how did you get into Fleet?
Well, interesting story. So, I used to work in incident management. So I used to do Civil Contingencies Act, which is great. And you had a really high level of security clearance. So you used to see all sorts of things. How would you drag me away from that, you say? I just love Fleet. You know, I've always loved Fleet. And the job came up and I thought, I haven't got much experience, but I like it. And the guy who was interviewing said, you never know, you know, let's go through it all. And there's plenty of professionals below me that were very expert in it. So I applied and got it. And he was like, oh my God, you know, I've got it now, I've got to do something. So 2 years of a very sharp learning curve, reliant on clever people in my team who are still all there, and learning the job as I went on. I do remember my first meeting in week two, was to go and speak to our lease car supplier on an annual review where we were spending £20 million. And I had no prep or anything for it, so I just stood in front of the MD going, right, what should we talk about? So I was in at the deep end, but I love it. And I've been doing it 20 years. I like to call it semi-early retirement because I'm clearly not that old for those that can see me. So I didn't want to lose the knowledge I've gained over 20 years by just leaving. So I do consulting now, but only on a part-time basis. So I don't want to work full-time. I've got a golf handicap to improve and a bit of charity work and all the usual stuff, you know, all the great ambitions and travel. So I'm into week seven of that now. So long summer holiday and then working in earnest to get some cash in the bank again.
Fleet managers have never been under more pressure to make the transition from what they've always done to this newfangled thing called electric vehicles. What's the key thing that you've learned in those 20 years that will help speed that transition?
I think, you know, when we first started the journey 10 years ago now, when it was mainly plug-in hybrids and the odd Nissan Leaf that did 80 miles range, you know, that so people didn't like using it because they always got stranded. So it was very early days, so there had to be some incentives.
Yeah.
So there was lots of government incentives there, which was very generous, and those were trying to tease those early pioneers, into the vehicles. And the biggest change was BIK. You know, BIK was transformative. So I think when you think about EVs, you always talk about the vehicle, but actually the most important bit is winning hearts and minds.
Totally.
Because if you can win hearts and minds and get ambassadors, they will then go out and tell 50 people how great it is. And I spent ages, you know, stuck on a road because the charger wouldn't work. And in those early days, and still now occasionally, but much better, you know, you have to tell, there were stories, weren't they? Yeah. You like a story. And so we have these stories to tell about, I was stranded on New Year's Eve and all this. And, you know, people kind of made jolly out of it and said, you know, these are the things that make us what we are. And, you know, they're not life-threatening.
So winning the hearts and minds, how do you do that? Because there's a lot of people here who say, yeah, we need to make that transition, haven't started yet. And frankly, I'm a bit nervous about it.
I think there's two things, really. One is, how much is it going to cost me? Because everything ultimately boils down to money. Whatever we want to do in life, we need money. And we might need more than we've got, we might need less, but it's all about money. So first of all, this is the offer. This is what it can do for you. This is how we can save you money. And then secondly, it's about the difference between an EV and a petrol or diesel vehicle. So charging was the main one. And 8 years ago, it was pretty awful. But saying that, I had a home charger installed 8-9 years ago, first one, and it never let me down. It was overnight, it was fine, it wasn't smart, but you plug it in overnight, come in the morning, and got a full charge. So I think people just thought it was really difficult. And I think what we ended up doing was giving people the opportunity to trial it for a bit, see how they got on, work out the cost to them, which means working with that lease code, so they could model it for people and say, this will cost you this much, the petrol or diesel equivalent will cost you this much. And actually, worst case, it's even, you're breaking even, your worst case. And actually, you're doing a great thing for the environment, for people, for the, not just for, you know, global warming, but, you know, particulates. 45,000 people a year die of poor air quality. Yeah. And, you know, you're doing a lot, but for people and the environment. And once you get people in an EV, they love it. It's the best thing ever, isn't it? It's like a go-kart.
Not sure we should be promoting that.
Obviously around the garden.
Yes, indeed.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
Dale, I mean, I remember, but way back when, I mean, before we were talking electric vehicles at any scale, a gentleman by the name of Steve Anderson, you remember that name?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He and I visited you.
Was it Senex?
No, it was, we came to one of your Bristol offices or warehouse, and we brought a Mercedes-Benz E-Vito.
Ah, remember that now, yes. It wasn't cheap, was it?
Oh, gosh, no. It was something like, I don't know, £1,100 a month.
We had to lease it through you. I remember it now vividly.
Because to that point, it's that's the journey we've come on, isn't it? From, and I think it had like 50 miles range. Yeah. We were trying to find a plug that we could plug it in somewhere in the warehouse. Did you actually take it for a while? No. I didn't think so. But that was
a good try, though. It was an excellent traffic.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, and it would have done a small job somewhere. But this is the thing, timing is a lot of everything, isn't it, really? Because we had them, Modec, Smith's Electric Vehicles, in the commercial vehicle world. And a few cars knocking around the G-Wiz.
Mitsubishi IMI, we had.
Yes, the Mitsubishi IMI.
Terrible car that was, unfortunately. Other terrible cars on the vehicle, by the way.
Indeed. But when do you think the timing became right? Was it the point of financial change, or was it the BIK where people were putting lots of money in their pockets? And obviously that's the car world as opposed to vans. What's your thought on that?
I think the cars, it was, you know, BIK, it's always about tax, isn't it? You know, you can do something well, do something good for tax, and people will, you know, buy into it. So I think the BIK thing was a big thing. The grant was there, you know, it used to be a grant off the vehicle as well as some money off the charge point. So it all felt quite easy, and you felt like you were doing the right thing, and it wasn't, you know, costing you out of your pocket. Vans is a harder sell. and you really did need telematics data to pick the low-hanging fruit first, get the pioneers in, get them understanding it. The cost was still high, so again, we had to look at some quite complex TCO modelling. And you know, lots of people do it now. They say within 4 years or 3 years, it will cost you the equivalent. And after that point, if you keep it for 6 and 2 years, you're in profit, as it were. So you had to really look at the van one really carefully. And at the time, vans were behind cars. So your example of, you know, a big panel-sized van that did less than 70 miles on a charge, it's a hard sell. And we had, you know, people say, I'm going to get abandoned, you know, I'm going to be in the middle of nowhere.
And it would have felt like that. And there have been vehicles, even relatively recently, in my memory of the last 3 or 4 years, where... But interestingly, so to your point about money changes things, we had a deal. I think there's Joe is around from Vanarama. So we had days, I don't know if he's here, he's not, but Joe and I, we got a deal put on our plate, and it was it was a terrible electric vehicle. It was the Transporter, the VW Transporter, you know, and it's fine now, the original one. Yeah. Had a range of about 60 miles, but it was cheap, and the manufacturer put a lot of money behind it, the grants were there, everything was there. It was about £180 a month. It was sold like hotcakes. We had a few problems, people just kind of not getting it. But money in the van world is not easy, is it?
It's not. And I think the other thing, there was a lot of myths around about EVs in the early days. You know, you can't use them in rain, and you know, the battery will explode and catch fire. And you know, we spent a lot of time kind of myth busting, and you almost do that in parallel with the sales pitch about how it can be better for you. And you know, at the time we were, I can admit it now because those people probably won't know, but you know, we were effectively discounting EVs by increasing the leasing cost for our drivers on a petrol or a diesel. So we were incentivizing EVs or disincentivizing ICE, which was the way to go for a number of years to try and try and persuade people to change their behaviors and do something different. And it is that, you know, the old phrase, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast, was never truer than it was for EV adoption. Culture change is huge. But once people saw them, you know, in the flesh and saw you driving around in them and borrowed them and thought, this is all right, then actually, you know, they're automatic, you know, there's not many things to press, you know, pretty straightforward.
Tell me about Dale the Man. So, the Environment Agency, why do you care? I mean, that's a job where a lot of people, industry, pushes back. We're not worried about you guys. We've got a job to do. But you stuck at it and you care about the environment. You care about what you do. Why does that matter to Dale?
I think, you know, some things are in your DNA and some things you can transport into your DNA. So, you know, a safety culture and the rest of it. But if you care about the environment, and I was a biologist by training, so my background is biology, so I did environmental science, environmental biology. So I've always had a strong background in nature. And actually, you know, going into fleet was almost the perfect match of how can we make our fleet greener and better by and protect the environment. So it was a perfect, you know, foil for me, if you like, to try and make a change. And when you're passionate about something, you drive and you drive and you drive and you drive, you get people on board. And, you know, people share that passion with you. Absolutely. And you get more and more people passionate about it. And ultimately, people who work for the Environment Agency are passionate about the environment.
Yeah.
They want to see better things for their kids and their kids' kids and all the rest of it. So for me, it was an easy task because I was so into it in the first place.
Yeah. And you mentioned, or Paul mentioned, this transition into a new role 7 weeks in. Tell us about the new job, what you're up to.
So my intention was never to advertise. You know, I don't want to go out pitching my wares across everyone because that gets...
This is a big advert.
This is a massive advert. So when I say that, I don't really mean it, obviously. So anybody's interested. So at the moment, I'm working with a number of different organisations on a variety of different subjects, actually, because I think the terrible kind of truth about this thing is I spent 20 years in fleet industry as a fleet director. You learn a huge amount, and actually to then leave and retire early, emphasis on the word early,
after three everybody, yeah, say, yeah, early,
yeah. But you don't want to lose your 20 years of experience, knowledge, stories, tales. You want to give something back, if you like. I know it sounds really crass and, you know, charity and all the rest of it, but there is lots of things you can do. And also help the next generation. You know, I work with AFP about where are the next generation of fleet managers, heads of fleet directors all coming from? And if we don't put snick into the industry, how are we going to get snick out of it?
Do you know, I was really encouraged today. There was, it was yesterday, a name you might know, Eric Bristow. The fleet manager.
The other Bristow, yeah.
But he came up, he said, I've come out of retirement to work in this role in the Rob Choppies, and there's my apprentice, and he's going to be taking over from me in about 18 months. Isn't that great? I was like, wow, what wonderful. And he's enrolled him on the AFP. So will you continue your work with AFP and sort of encourage the younger generation?
I think, you know, one of the big changes AFP had made, they've made lots of huge changes, but, you know, having a proper fleet apprenticeship now is huge. You know, we were giving people in our organization in fleet business apprenticeships and all sorts of that weren't really appropriate, but they were good, but they weren't as appropriate as a proper fleet apprenticeship. And people learn it on the job. And let's be honest, you know, drivers, if they don't like a product, they'll let you know. So it's quite a difficult job. And to get people into that, saying, well, you will get a lot of angry phone calls and, but, you know, there is some reward because at the end of the day, you'll get a better environment. It's quite a hard sell in many ways, and you want to encourage people to do it, you know. Now, my son has just gone to university, and I said, oh, do you want to be into fleet? He said, God, no. But that, you know, so he's, you know, not untypical of 18, 19-year-olds, you know. Do someone go to their careers advisor and say, I want to work in fleet? They don't. So how can we change that perception of it?
Well, people like you telling all your good stories, Dale.
I'll write the book.
But, I mean, wouldn't it be great? It's been a real journey for the Environment Agency, and I remember way back when I was working for Mitsubishi, and we were supplying you some L200s, and they were doing some cracking jobs, but they are such a challenging environment that you work in. Where do you think is the last bastion for the electric vehicle within that world? Where do you think is going to be the toughest bit to decarbonize?
I mean, without question, it's 4x4s, off-road 4x4s. I mean, we, in my previous job, you know, we did some work with OEMs starting 4 or 5 years ago about how to electrify 4x4s. And the challenge for many organizations, EA was one of them, is they tow.
Yes.
And they tow pumps that, you know, they've come down a bit in weight, but they were 3.45 tons. So when you tow that kind of weight with an EV, it causes all sorts of problems. And how you get past that is an engineering issue, not just you can't just put a load more batteries on because there's the tow weights and all the other things that go with it, and then the towing bit. So it gets really complicated. Now, I don't think we'll solve that problem for at least the next 2 to 3 years. Someone cracks it, and I said to one of the OEMs, you know, I want to pay less than £40,000 a year. I want 300 miles, and I want 3.5 tons towing capacity. They went, yeah, you know, Santa Claus is coming next week kind of thing, you know. It's, but, you know, that's the reality. And people are saying, I'm just going to keep buying petrols or more likely diesel pickup trucks and stuff. You know, there are things out there, but when you add weight and towing and range, because most of the Environment Agency operate in rural areas, they're not near 50 kilowatt charge points, they're not near other places, so they have to rely on getting from home or depot and back again in a day on a single charge. And as an emergency responder under the Civil Contingencies Act, they can't not do that. So that's the biggest challenge. If someone cracks it with my £40,000, 3.5 tons, 300 mile range, they'll be millionaires.
One of the areas in fleet where we do have solutions which I think are workable yet are still to really hit critical mass is vans.
Yeah.
What needs to happen with vans, Dale? Because, you know, Paul loves them, and it breaks my heart every day to see him upset because vans just still aren't quite there when it comes to uptake. The technology's there, load capacities are there, range is there, but still people aren't buying them. What have we got to do?
I think the thing with vans is, you know, things have changed massively since that terrible COVID incident. So 80% of the EA fleet used to return to base. Now it's probably less than 20%. So actually, more and more vans are on people's drives in the street. And you're then into the problems of where they're going to be charged, because they can't be depot charged anymore. If they can, everyone goes at the same time, and suddenly your 7 kilowatt, 22 kilowatt charge is no good. You need 50, 150. So I think there's been a cultural change in people's working patterns. And that means that the vans become more of a challenge than they used to be. And I think as the ranges get better, it becomes less of an issue. But the range across all shapes and sizes still not there yet. Some are good, some are brilliant, and it's getting better all the time, but they always lag slightly behind cars. And, you know, I won't mention the OEM, but there's a manufacturer here with a car that does 500 miles. You know, that is pretty significant. That is, and it charges in, you know, 80% within 15, 20. You know, that is a game changer. If vans went that way, people would not hesitate. Plus the fact for a lot of drivers, the may BIK might not apply. So there's no, the incentive for a van drive is less.
You're absolutely right. I was working with one client where the BIK does apply. And where it does, they can save 130, I think it is, a month or something like that, you know, with on the personal benefit in kind. But it does seem, I always think it's like the Cinderella of the transport world, because we don't get the benefits. You know, everybody else gets to go to the ball, the BIK rates and all that sort of stuff, home charging, you know, all of that nonsense. And yet, the humble van, it does feel like a bit of a challenge. But I'd love, because you've been through and seen a lot of stuff in your career, both pre-fleet and post-fleet. What do you think you've learned in terms of just that resilience around getting through challenges, whether they be fleet or whether they be some other? Think back to a time where you were really challenged, and how did you get through that, and what did you learn?
I think for any situation you're in, the response is the same, in the sense of you always need to stay calm. And actually, the way you get most things done is through people. You know, fleet is a people-to-people business. And if you can't get on with people, if your interpersonal skills are not there, you will find it very hard to win people over. You know, incident management, I used to do, I'd be sat there with flooding, and, you know, John Prescott used to walk in the room, and all sorts of other dignitaries to, and, you know, you've got to be able to deal with that as well. And people, you know, we're all human beings at the end of the day. We've all got our weaknesses and frailties and strengths. And as long as you recognise that and you can get people on board, you can survive any situation. As long as you don't panic.
Keep calm,
carry on, yeah. Keep
absolutely.
Carry on being a fleet manager, yeah.
Now, the time pressures are creeping up, but Paul has a little end of podcast tradition.
Oh, here we go.
And I suspect he's going to get it out for you. Hang on one second.
So, Dale, we have an end of podcast tradition, as every good podcast should. It should have an end of tradition. And we present you with the EV Cafe Magic Wand. Now, this clearly is not the magic wand.
Free access to Everly.
Yes. But I built a career on this. This little humble selfie stick has been very powerful for me. So I'm going to give you the power. So, Dale, in your current situation, you know, you're looking at the horizon and seeing what the future holds, getting your golf handicap down, but also kind of bringing on the next generation, investing. What do you wish for in life as it stands?
Personally or business life?
I think you can mix the two. We'll let you have two.
Yeah, I think we all want to live in a more tolerant world, which, you know, affects all our business and our private lives equally. I love travelling, which makes it hard in the environmental bit, but I managed to do a very long train journey this year all the way down to Croatia, which is great. So low carbon travel is what I really like doing. So a bit of a challenge, a bit of a plan. But I think in a business context, I want fleet to be recognised, or to continue to be recognised. And one of the ways you do that is by great stuff like you're doing at EV Cafe, but also awards. It sounds a bit crass, but an award, take it back to the office, show it to the board, it gets things done in fleet. So I want more and more people to see the value in awards and ceremonies and things like that. So I think I just want the industry to be better recognised for the great work it does and not to be seen as a support service.
Do you know what? Every time I go on to, I don't know, any government website or a thing, and it says, what's your career in? And it gives, I can be a consultant, I can be a thing. I can't be in automotive.
No. It's the same if you get insurance. It's not. There's nothing even vaguely fleet on that.
No, no fleet. No, a transport sort of transport and logistics.
Automotive.
But I'm not in. Yeah, but it's simple, isn't it? It's one of the biggest sectors of our country. We're in automotive. Absolutely outrageous.
We keep the country moving.
We do. We absolutely do. So, John, this has been wonderful. Albeit time pressure, we could spend a long time with you, Dale, for sure. But it's been great, hasn't it?
Yeah. Dale, I love the fact that you have as much passion for the environment today as you had when you started your journey, and that we're going to benefit from your experience for many, many years to come through the AFP and the work that you do. This has been a revelation for 30 minutes. I didn't know you 30 minutes ago. I feel like I've learned a lot in the last 30 minutes. That's precious time and great experience. Thank you.
Thank you to John and Paul as well for inviting me. It's been brilliant.
Oh, well, honestly, Dale, it really is my pleasure. I long suspected that you're a really decent guy, and the time that we've had to, but it just gives me that understanding that really you have delivered already. But the bit I'm most grateful for is that you're going to stick around for a little while longer and still going to be kind of giving us. It wasn't retirement. You are not leaving us. You're giving us the benefit of your wisdom over the next few years, and we look forward to much more, Dale Einon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the EV Cafe. Go check out the website for many more things like this, many more podcasts from fleet managers, but also the whole ecosystem of electrification. And finally, of course, connect with Dale on LinkedIn because, you know, he wants a semi-retirement. So if you've got jobs for him, reach out and I'm sure he can help. But in the meantime, thanks ever so much for joining and have a great day.
Thank you.